It's meaning of life. Yeah, so it's like this. I know that one day I will be myself with my wife, with my family, comfortable.
Okay, so who are we listening to here?
That's Andre Twendeli. He's a refugee from the Democratic Republic of Congo, whom I've been spending a lot of time with over the last 9 months.
And Andre says he's about to start a new life. So what is all that about?
He's a refugee, and he resettled in New Jersey just 13 days before President Trump was elected. So he's talking about starting his new life in America.
That's quite a time to show up in the United States.
Yes, it absolutely is. And his wife, Lizette, is stuck at a refugee camp in Africa where they met. So I've been following Andre and Lizette's efforts to reunite, and that's obviously become much more difficult because of changes in U.S. refugee policy.
I'm Kai Wright. I'm an editor and host in WNYC's Narrative Unit.
And I'm Matt Katz. I report on immigration, national security, and refugees for WNYC News. Kai, if I were to ask you where most of the refugees in the United States come from, what would you say?
Well, certainly if you follow the political debate over the past couple of years, you'd assume Syria are at least one of the majority Muslim countries Trump wanted to ban.
That's actually what I thought as well, but that is not the case. Over the last 3 years, more refugees have come from the Democratic Republic of Congo than any other country on earth. That floored me when I first learned about it, and it's what drew me to this story about Andre and Lizette. As we all know, President Trump came into office promising this wholesale remaking of U.S. immigration policy. There was the travel ban and, of course, the border wall. But what's gotten less attention is the dramatic shift in refugee policy, like slashing the number of refugees to the lowest numbers since the 70s and increasing hurdles for refugees who were trying to get here.
And so Andre made it here just before all of that happened.
Right, 13 days before Trump was elected. And he makes it into New Jersey, which is where our story begins. Back in the spring, Andre and I met at a park near his apartment in Elizabeth. That's a port city across from New York City. It has a large immigrant population. And we sat down and he told me about his escape from the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Why did you leave?
It is a long story, but I will explain just in some words.
How Andre Twendeli left his home in the DRC, a vast, resource-rich country the size of Western Europe. Back then, Andre was a law student.
I like to defend people, to stand for people. People who don't have money, people who are poor and they are in trouble.
He wanted to become a lawyer to help the underdog. Thing is, underdogs and their allies, they tend to disappear.
When I'm talking about disappearance, it's you die. The government will kill you.
The Belgians' brutal colonial rule over the DRC lasted for decades, finally coming to an end in 1960. But corruption and war followed. Andre was a budding leader, so he joined a political party known for its nonviolence and its opposition to the authoritarian rule of Congolese President Joseph Kabila. In November 2005, Andre and seven of his law school friends organized a protest. Andre was in charge of security, so he was at the front.
We saw just people coming in front of us and they start arresting us. They put us in prison and they start beating us. Every day, I'm telling you, every
day. One night, they blindfolded Andre and his friends, marched them out of their cells and deep into the forest. Andre had become friendly with one of the guards, as much as you can under such circumstances. So when they lined the students up, this guard made sure Andre was last. The first seven were shot and killed. Then it was Andre's turn. The guard pretended to shoot him. Andre dropped, played dead.
It was very, very bad. People died in my presence. My friends, they died in my presence. It's a long time ago, but I have that image. I remember everything.
He waited until daybreak when the guards were gone.
I tried to touch all of my friends there. They were dead, all of them.
He walked for hours, eventually ending up in a village where a classmate lived.
And the time he saw me, He didn't recognize me. Is it you, Andre? I said, yes, it's me. And we start crying.
His friend gave him food, a change of clothes, and the equivalent of $50.
My plan was just to be far from my country. That was my plan.
Andre bribed a truck driver who smuggled him into Zambia, then to the Zaleka refugee camp in Malawi, this sliver of a country in Southeast Africa. Andre Twendeli was 23 years old.
So I start a new life. It was not easy.
...33,000 people from the Democratic Republic of Congo and the countries of Burundi and Rwanda have been forced to start new lives at Zaleka. Andre built his home there out of mud bricks. He fought hunger, illness, and loneliness. Then, 8 years into his life there, a woman named Lizette Lekoji walked into that camp, barefoot. She grew up the youngest of 12 in eastern Congo. She had been in school there, learning how to make clothes. She shared her story with me when I visited the refugee camp last fall. It was evening. She was at her uncle's house.
I was preparing food in the kitchen, and I saw under the door from the other side people entering. I had no idea what was going on.
Her uncle had become an enemy of President Kabila, the same man Andre had protested years earlier. Lizette didn't really understand the dispute or the politics. All she knew was that to punish her uncle, the president went after her entire family. They took her away, put her in a jail cell by herself.
The police told me, we are going to kill you tomorrow night. I started crying.
As she tells me her story, Lizette cries just once. It's when she talks about her lost child. When they arrested her, she was forced to leave her 2-year-old daughter behind. She would never see her again. If she's still alive today, the girl, named Lorette, would be 6 years old. A few days passed. Then 3 police officers came to her cell. She tells me the officers didn't release her. Instead, they raped her, all 3. Then they gave her 5,000 Congolese francs, about $3.50, to run away. She didn't know where to go. She just walked. She ended up living on the streets of a dusty Congolese border town next to Zambia, scrounging for food. At some point, a Tanzanian bus driver stopped to help her. She told him everything. He took her to Zambia.
Lusaka.
And then another bus to Malawi. And finally, the Zaleka refugee camp. The transition was hard on Lizette, even the simplest things. She waited 2 weeks for a pair of shoes. She had to find a place to live. She had to collect her own food and charcoal.
I realized that life would be very complicated there. Very complicated, really.
Yet amid the misery, she fell in love.
What do you remember about that first time you met him?
I don't know. Jeez, I'm going to start crying. Sometimes, when I'm at home sleeping, I still think about it.
For Andre, that first moment is so vivid. Playing Scrabble in French. That's what he was supposed to be doing that day at a friend's house, but he just couldn't stop thinking about a woman there. Lizette was visiting his friend's wife. Lizette's a member of the Luba ethnic group, just like Andre. And just like him, she's a devout Christian.
Dieu, il a envoyé pour moi.
Andre asked for her number. She refused. She didn't even know him, she remembers thinking. Andre, handsome with a shaved head, was beaming with confidence.
That girl, I want to talk to her, so I don't know where to start. How can I talk to her?
Lizette, short with a warm smile, could not believe his insistence.
He said, even if you refuse, I am the one marrying you. There is no one aside from me.
Why do you love her?
I love her because she can complete something that miss in me.
Yes.
For Lisette,
l'amour, ça vient comme ça.
Love just happens, she says. I love him, he loves me. Dating in a refugee camp. Totally different, but kind of the same. They watched sports, soccer games on a big dirt field. They shopped at the market next to the camp. They ate, if there was money, maybe something sweet. And on May 23rd, 2015, they married, right there in the camp.
Oui, on avait fêté, vraiment. On avait bien fêté.
They each keep pictures from that day.
Oh, wow.
You look so happy.
Yes. Me and my wife. It was like a dream. Yeah, she was very happy that day.
They woke up together in the house that Andre had built so many years earlier. They had no electricity, no running water, no work. But they had a plan. In 2014, months before they had met, Andre was interviewed by the United Nations Refugee Agency. This was part of a years-long process to resettle in another country. He underwent security checks, he had more interviews, then he just had to wait for a country to take him.
Maybe Australia, maybe Denmark or Finland.
The chances of Andre actually leaving were, well, let's put it this way, less than 1% of refugees worldwide are resettled each year. Andre defied those odds. About a year after their wedding, he won admission to, of all places, the United States. But it was one ticket, one visa. Lisette would have to stay behind.
I was crying like a baby.
He had been a refugee for 11 years. 11 years. With no communication with his family back in Congo. 11 years of being stuck. So it was decided. Andre would take this opportunity and go. Lisette would stay a little longer and then follow him to America.
She told me that, no, just go. I know that you are my husband, you love me, and you will do your best to help me so I can join you there in USA.
Over the last 3 years, the U.S. has taken in more refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo than from any other country. About 2,500 of them have ended up in New York and New Jersey. Andre Twendeli was set to join this under-the-radar migration.
Ça fait toujours mal.
Everyone cried.
J'ai laissé ma femme dans cette ville-là.
But Andre cried much more than me.
André l'a pleuré beaucoup par rapport à moi.
Because here we live a very complicated life. And he was just thinking about how he was leaving me in this mess, which hurt more.
They thought they'd be reunited in a few months, six maybe. But as Andre's plane made its way to JFK Airport, the political landscape in the U.S. was shifting in ways that would completely reshape his new life. October 26th, 2016. That same day, with patriotic music blaring, Donald Trump took the stage at a campaign rally in North Carolina.
Crooked Hillary Clinton.
In his speech, he went after Hillary Clinton and her refugee plan.
She wants, in her words, to have totally open borders, which would destroy America's middle class.
Trump cited Syrian refugees as a threat. He claimed lax security screening allows terrorists posing as refugees to sneak into the country. Thing is, the last time an American was killed by a refugee in a terrorist attack on U.S. soil was the 1970s. Still, Trump labels refugees Trojan horses.
And these are people we have no idea who they are, where they come from.
Here's where the facts are important. If you want to come to the U.S. as a refugee, you receive a lot of scrutiny. You're interviewed by American officials to confirm you're a victim of persecution. You're screened against terrorist watch lists. And you have to document your family tree. But amid the worst refugee crisis since World War II, Trump says that's not enough.
Donald Trump wins the presidency. Donald J. Trump will become the 45th president of the United States.
With our new president, everything is tough. Things are not like before.
Trump's new policies are delaying Lisette's arrival in big and small ways. He slashed the number of refugees allowed into the country to the lowest level in nearly 40 years. He banned most refugee admissions for 4 months last year, which clogged the pipeline. He even tried to suspend a visa specifically for relatives of refugees, like Lizette.
I don't know if I'll ever be able to join my husband. It hurts. I need my husband and he needs me.
Matt, let me jump in here for a second. I mean, Andre and Lizette have been separated, what, for more than a year now. How are they doing with this? How's their relationship?
Well, you can hear it in their voices. It's obviously gut-wrenching for both of them. There's this massive change in American politics and policy that's completely altered their lives. And this is only year one for the Trump administration, so there's a lot of uncertainty. But Andre has to just push all of that aside and try to build a life in New Jersey. So right now, it's about the basics. He's got a place to live, he's got a small community of friends, and he has a job. I visited him at work a few months back. It was at a place called True World Foods. It was the middle of the night, and Andre was in the break room calling his wife.
Every day when we have break time, I call my wife. Yeah, you see, she's online. She's waiting for me. Pandisha Sauti. Bien.
True World Foods is a fish distributor, wedged between the whizzing New Jersey Turnpike and Newark Liberty Airport. So close, it feels like the planes are landing on the roof. After dark, this place comes alive. The overnight crew processes fish that will become tomorrow's sushi at some of the toniest restaurants in Manhattan and beyond, from Nobu to the Borcada Casino. All but two of the dozen or so workers I meet are immigrants.
I'm from Nigeria. My name is Charles.
My name is Honey. I'm from the Philippines.
I'm Amos from Liberia, West Africa.
Nice to meet you, Amos.
Pleasure.
These men settled in New Jersey when the U.S. was more welcoming to refugees. Andre himself arrived here just 13 days before Donald Trump was elected president. Trump soon reduced the refugee quota from 110,000 to a historically low 45,000, saying he was concerned that terrorists could pose as refugees. That's part of the reason why Lizette remains stuck in the refugee camp. So while they wait, Andre works, saving money. If and when she gets here, he wants to be ready.
Good job, I'm working.
It's good.
Yeah, I'm happy.
Andre sorts fish all night, labeling packages with product names that are entirely unfamiliar to him because he's never eaten sushi. And he does it all in rough conditions. True World Foods is one big refrigerator.
You were correct. It is very cold.
Yeah, it's very cold. I told you.
I just want to make sure I get this. You're wearing a long jacket, ski pants, jeans underneath.
And also, I have two jackets to protect my chest. It's cold in my country, but not like here.
Salmon from Alaska, sable fish. You know, fluke, this is local caught in the Long Island area, up there fishing off Montauk.
That's Steve Sprague, Andre's boss. He walks me from a cold room to an even colder room, minus 10 degrees. Steve is enamored with the fish he works with.
This is a 350-pound fish whole, capable of swimming 35 miles an hour with a head as hard as a rock. If he ever hit you, you'd know it.
As he works, Steve throws out all these big questions.
What is our purpose of our life? Where does human value come from? And everybody likes God. Why? Why do we have immigrants? Because we have borders. Why do we have borders? Because we have separation. We have division.
Steve tells me the company was founded by Japanese immigrants, and his boss is from Korea, started as a driver at 4:50 an hour and didn't speak a word of English. Borders, separation, division, that all gets blurred when fish from every ocean on Earth gets packaged by people from everywhere else on Earth.
My family goes back here on my father's side till about 1816 in the port section of our city. My sister did the roots.
I meet the seven-term mayor of Elizabeth, Chris Bolwidge, at a Colombian restaurant. His Elizabeth ancestry dates back more than 200 years to Germans and then Irish. It's a history that shows just how much the city has been a refuge for immigrants. Jews after World War II, Cubans in the 80s, and now Congolese Christians.
The city of Elizabeth has been a melting pot, but it hasn't been a melting pot for the last 25 years. It's been a melting pot since the Constitution. And the city of Elizabeth has dealt with immigration for over 200 years, and I think we've done it well.
Andre lives in the El Mora section of Elizabeth. It used to be a Jewish neighborhood. He actually lives on the same street where Jared Kushner's grandparents moved as refugees after the Holocaust. The horror of that moment helped to usher in an era of American bipartisan sympathy for refugees, including the founding of the International Rescue Committee, the IRC, which aids refugees worldwide. Today, the IRC's local office in Elizabeth runs the state's refugee resettlement program.
We bring them back typically to a furnished apartment that has a hot meal and household supplies ready for them.
Allison Mian is the IRC's resettlement director.
And we work with them pretty intensively for 90 days to get set up here in New Jersey.
The IRC moved Andre into a one-bedroom apartment with two other Congolese men in a building teeming with immigrants. When they arrived, they attended Allison's three-day cultural orientation. Like this one. On the day I visit, refugees are divided into groups, each with a translator. So whatever Allison says is simultaneously whispered into four different languages. Most know next to nothing about America. Even getting here today was a challenge for some. So they are hanging on her every word.
The goal of this class is to give you a little bit more information about life here in New Jersey.
Money is the first topic. They each received about $900 when they arrived to cover security deposits for housing and to put some food in the fridge. But there's also public assistance, which legal immigrants are eligible for.
And does anyone know what Medicaid is?
Blank stares.
Okay, that's okay. You just got here.
Then straight talk.
So it's very common in this state, in this country, for people to work multiple jobs. You know, your first job may not pay very well. It may not be the best job. But as you work more in this country and learn new skills and improve your English, that's how you can get better jobs in the future.
Andre's $11 an hour job at True World Foods covers meals and rent. What's left, he sends to Lizette in the refugee camp in Malawi. She uses some of it to pay a guy with a generator to charge her phone. And that is so critical. For Andre and Lizette, that phone is their only way to stay connected.
Hello.
No skill.
A few months ago, I stopped in to see Andre at his apartment. Mon chérie, my sweetheart, popped up on his phone. That's Lizette. It was their second wedding anniversary. Andre introduced me.
My name is Matt. It's nice to meet you. It's nice to talk to you on the phone.
Thank you very much.
A few weeks later, I boarded a plane to Malawi to meet Lizette and to get some sense of her faraway life. I'm in a car driving north out of Malawi's capital city of Lilongwe. I pass roadside markets where men sell snacks of mice head to tail, and women stack small tomatoes into pyramids on wooden tables. Then, a little white sign with one word, Saleka.
I think that's the camp.
Turning right into the camp.
There's no fence around Saleka refugee camp, so my translator Joseph Chisala and I drive right in.
Hello. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
In a tiny security office, I hand the guard a letter from the Malawian government giving me permission to visit. Then I wait for Lizette next to a flagpole with no flag. Goats and children and women carrying jugs of water amble by. When the wind picks up, a fine red dust blows around, making it hard to breathe.
Lizette. Bonjour. Wow, I am here. Can you believe it? So nice to meet you.
I'm here.
How are you?
I give Lizette a suitcase from Andre. It's filled, mostly with clothes and shoes. Lots of shoes, actually. Lizette likes high heels.
Did you know you were getting all this stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. This overcrowded camp of nearly 33,000 Africans is a small part of a worldwide problem. Tens of millions of people are fleeing violence in the Middle East, Central America, and with far less attention, Africa. Many hope to resettle in the United States, but changes in immigration policy are making that less likely. So temporary camps like this become permanent communities.
Can you show us around your home?
An old sweatshirt serves as the doormat, and there's a makeshift lock on the door. Lizette worries about intruders, rapists.
Is it dangerous in this camp?
Yes, I am alone, she says. I suffer every day. At night, she says she thinks about her husband and how he's not here anymore. There's no electricity or running water. She cooks outside. At one point, some kids come up to me asking for my empty water bottles. Lizette explains they light them on fire and then cook food over the melting plastic.
We are refugees. There are no such things as kitchens. We eat everywhere, and it's kind of a mess.
The UN's refugee agency supports this camp, but it's severely underfunded by donor nations, so food rations are below the recommended minimum. Andre helps out, sending her money from his job that she uses to buy extra food.
Oui, allô. Bonjour.
While we're walking around, Andre calls. I see her smile. For a moment, it seems like the stress of camp life melts away.
Okay, then bye. See you. Au revoir.
She needs to hear his words.
When I speak to my husband, I am always joyous, really, very happy. He loves me and he tells me this on the phone. Like today he said, I love you, I adore you, you are the mother of my children.
They don't have children yet, but starting a family is a big part of their American dream. The next day is Sunday, and God is rising from every corner of the camp. Music and song spill from the many churches. Most of the Africans here are Christian, which is notable. Muslim refugees from Syria and elsewhere have become a lightning rod in the immigration debate, provoking fears about terrorism and driving policy change. But these new policies have also ensnared this community of African Christians. Lizette and I climb a small hill to her Pentecostal church, the same church where she prayed alongside her husband, Andre. The pastor is beseeching God for mercy.
Sickness,
as the preacher says, is part of life here. Malaria, typhoid, mental illness. There's just one clinic that serves the whole camp and the nearby villages. Free medicine isn't always available, and the government forbids refugees from holding jobs. So to get by, to get food and medicine, they rely on an underground economy. Andre sold charcoal and taught English. Lizette tells me she makes clothes and sells them.
Ici, moi, je fais la couture.
She even stitched me a traditional shirt with a cropped collar. Fits perfectly.
Bonjour.
Bonjour, soyez le bienvenu.
Merci.
After church, Lizette and I go to meet a few of Andre's friends.
And right now, I'm working as an academic assistant.
David Zabulon is a former classmate of Andre's at a college program here that's run by a Jesuit school in Colorado. Andre got a diploma in liberal studies, earning a near 4.0 GPA.
Andre was a good guy.
Like Andre, David is a striver, filled with optimism. He says Andre will do amazing things in America.
Right now he's in a good position because in the U.S. they need people, they need brains to develop their country, to make their country big and a superpower. And
the talk then moves to Trump and how he has dramatically reduced refugee admissions into the U.S., even though the number of displaced people worldwide has increased from 43 million in 2009 to 66 million now. Some of the people I meet were born here and then had their own children. That's generations of stateless people.
I've been living in limbo for many years now, and I've learned a lot about life.
That's Alain Tenta. Like Andre, he was approved to come to the U.S. He and his 18 relatives passed all the interviews, all the medical tests. They even sold their possessions. But just days before their flight last July, the Trump administration implemented a 120-day ban on refugee admissions. It affected most refugees from everywhere, including Elaine's family. Now they're starting the application process all over again. And yet, Elaine still holds firm to his American dream.
I wanted to send a message, maybe for people going to hear this in the United States, that not all of us who are very bad, we are not all dangerous. Some people still love United States and still have positive mind and to develop the United States.
And who can search the mindset of God? Nobody knows, not one.
All told, I spent 5 days in the camp. At the airport, I wave my U.S. passport and board a flight home with an ease that Lizette may never know. Or David. Or Elaine.
Lift up your eyes on high and behold who hath created the earth.
I'm just happy to see you again today.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm happy to see you.
Long time.
It's been a long time.
Mm-hmm.
A few weeks after my trip, I visit Andre in New Jersey. While we're chatting, I open my laptop.
And that's your home.
Mm-hmm. I show him a picture of his bedroom back in the refugee camp.
Oh, I slept on this bed for more than 6 years. I don't want even to see it. It's a sign of poverty, sign of bad things. It's like I mix emotions.
Me, I'm here. Sometimes I'm happy because I'm here. I'm staying in good condition, something like that. But my wife, she's still in this kind of conditions, you see.
I also play him a video of a Sunday service at his old church, where his wife Lizette still attends.
Bastien.
Andre was the head of the men's choir there. Now, he attends a church in Elizabeth, where he shares the pews with African Americans.
See, I have no problem.
I have no problem.
That is too small.
Too small.
For my God to solve.
For my God to solve.
One Sunday, I go with Andre to church. It's Baptist, but he says it reminds him of his Pentecostal church back in the refugee camp. During the service, he shuts his eyes and he presses his fist against his forehead. He seems to be praying harder than anyone else in the room.
I pray also for my wife, for our marriage. I pray also for what I'm doing for her, for this process, for her to come here.
He also prays for his wife's health. On my last day visiting Lizette at the camp, she wasn't feeling well, so I went with her to a clinic. That's when I learned the extent of her health issues. Lizette gave the doctor permission to discuss her condition with me.
Yeah, her condition is a bit chronic now.
Dr. Isidore Yama gave me the basics. Lizette has blocked fallopian tubes, causing her pain. It also means she has fertility issues. The only way she can conceive is through in vitro fertilization, a procedure not available in Malawi.
Donc, je vis vraiment mal, il n'y a pas moyen.
It's very hard to live like this, she said. There's no way. Back in New Jersey, I gently raised the topic with Andre.
Does that give you more of a sense of urgency to get her here? Because she had...
No, not only because of that. I'm trying my best for her to come here because she's my wife. That's all. It's not because of that.
How many babies do you want?
5, 6, 7, 8. Too much?
That's a lot.
No, not a lot.
Do you think about if she comes here and it's still hard for her to have babies, if she still can't have babies?
No, it's not in my mind. When she comes here, she will give me a baby. I'm sure about that.
He's 35. She's 26. A lot has to happen before they can build a family together in America. So Andre waits. Waits for his wife to get here. Waits for her to be seen in an American hospital. Waits to have 5, 6, 7, 8 kids. But just like he made a life in the refugee camp, Andre is making a life in New Jersey. 74 Congolese refugees have resettled in the state since 2016, mostly in Elizabeth. Last summer, I went with Andre to a Congolese independence party downtown. The country's flag was waving in the front, and there was a big feast in the back.
This is our food, which we eat must be
Fufu. We call Fufu.
At the party, I met Sheila Kalulika, who arrived in the U.S. a year earlier with her daughter. She said at first she was lonely here.
Luckily, I met one of the lady at the hospital. She was speaking my language, Lingala, and I was surprised. I'm like, oh my God, I met someone from home. Then she said, you know, we have our community. And then she told me that I'm happy, I'm fine. And I love America, so.
What do you like about it?
About America, because we're free.
The party offered that rare moment so many immigrants and refugees look for, a sense of belonging. Any month now, Andre will get his green card. And in the meantime, he's trying to get a firmer footing in America. That way he'll be ready for Lizette whenever she arrives. Back at his apartment, Andre gets a call.
Sorry. Hello?
I need you here tomorrow at 12 o'clock.
12 o'clock tomorrow?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you so much. I will be there.
See you tomorrow. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Did you just get a job?
Actually, a second job. A temporary gig at a warehouse. Some of the money he earns will go towards gifts for Lizette, but much of it will pay for her cell phone. The phone that brings such comfort and such distress. That phone that connects the world he is creating to the one he left behind.
She's calling me again.
And there she is now.
Hello?
So Matt, what happens now for Andre and Lizette?
Well, refugee admissions have really slowed. We're on pace right now to accept fewer refugees than at any time since the 1970s. And that's because of various reasons, various changes that the administration made. There was a four-month hold on all refugee arrivals so they could review security procedures. And as a result of that, all of these new security measures have been implemented in terms of vetting refugees. And that just delays arrivals even further.
So on top of all the stuff that you've already talked about with Lizette, the changes that came after Andre got here, now there's this new thing. There's this new added security that's going to delay her even further.
Right. It means it will take her even longer than it would have in a process that already drags on for years in many cases.
Okay, so the Trump administration has said that the point of all of this is national security, that terrorists might sneak in through as refugees. Is there any truth to that?
There's no evidence that terrorists are actively trying to game the refugee system in order to sneak in as refugees and then commit terrorist attacks here. Refugees are actually screened more aggressively than any other traveler to the U.S. We've admitted some 3 million refugees in the last 40 years. And remember that the need is greater than it has been in many, many years. Lizette and millions of other refugees are stuck in countries that aren't their own because of persecution, often terrorism, back in their home countries.
And so you spent a week with Lizette at the refugee camp in Malawi where she and Andre met, right? So what stuck out for you from that trip? I imagine it was quite a lot.
Yeah, I left just being amazed by the permanency of the place. The reality is Zuleika Refugee Camp is not really a temporary camp. It's like a permanent settlement. Less than 1% of the people there are resettled every year. So people can stay in camps like this for generations. And what struck me was that people just live life because that is life. So they build homes and they start families. They gossip and they sweep their dirt floor in their houses. They plant gardens and they raise livestock. And, you know, they fall in love, as we saw with Andre and Lizette. Wow.
But what is the likelihood that Lizette then is going to be there permanently too? I mean, what are the odds that she's going to make it to New Jersey to reunite with Andre?
Well, it's hard to imagine that she's able to come anytime soon. Andre, even as we speak, is working to get her here. He's filed what's called an affidavit of relationship to certify that Lizette is indeed his wife, that she's indeed a refugee, and that she should be allowed to travel here. He filed it last April, but as far as we know, the application hasn't even been reviewed yet. So Andre waits. Lizette waits. Every one of these millions of refugees we hear about, they all have stories like this. And that's what makes the experience of Andre and Lizette so tragically universal.
Unsettled was reported by Matt Katz and edited by Sean Bowditch. The story was produced by Joseph Capriglione and mixed by Wayne Schulmeister. Special thanks to a long list of people: Jim Schachter, Ryan Piggott, Clarissa Diaz, Julianne Welby, Sarah Gonzalez, Ilya Meritz, Lee Hill, Andrea Bernstein, David Lewis, Alexandra Pennell, Joseph Chisala, and Julia Longoria. This project was a collaboration with PBS NewsHour Weekend and its series Chasing the Dream, focusing on poverty and economic opportunity in America.